originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Jude Feld.
Good evening, everybody, wherever in the world you may be. And welcome to Trainer Talk, the show trainers listen to. Brought to you by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is Jude Feld, and we'll spend the next hour shooting the breeze with our special guest, who I've known for most of his life and over half of mine. He was on Trainer Talk for the first time on April 16th, 2013, and he had saddled the winners of 382 races and amassed over $14 million in purses. Today, November 15th, 2017, those figures stand at 869 victories and $39,629,997 in purses. With two winners and a second at the recently concluded Breeders' Cup at Del Mar, it's been a fabulous 4 years for trainer Peter Miller. Hey, Pete, what's going on?
Hey, Jude. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, it's great. How about that? Over twice as many victories, almost three times the purse earnings, and two Breeders' Cups in your back pocket. That's pretty fantastic in 4 years' time.
Yeah, my only question is, where's the money?
Well, maybe you should check with your wife, Lonnie. She might be able to tell you where it is.
Hopefully someone knows where it is.
Yeah. Well, that's the good thing. If you have somebody that takes care of your money, it sure is a little bit easier to concentrate on the horses. Sometimes that's one of the hardest parts, is handling the business end. But you've always been a pretty good businessman.
Yeah, no, I try to run it like a business. You know, I think too many trainers forget that it is a business. And, they end up working for 40, 50 years and have nothing to show for it. So, you know, we do try and run it like a business. And, my dad was very good with money and taught me a few lessons. And, you know, I try to live like that.
Yeah, well, I know your wife takes a big role, or at least she used to before you had kids, but she used to take a big role in looking after the business part of your operation.
She still does. She still does. She does all the stuff that I hate to do, billing and, emails and silks and payroll and all the stuff that I really just don't like. So it frees me up to, focus on training horses and dealing with the owners.
Yeah, that's always a big factor too. When you come home from work, you still have phone calls to make and things to do and touch base. And this is a communications business, right?
Definitely, more so than ever. You know, it's all about relationships. It's about communication. And owners these days, they want to be involved. They want to know what's going on. They want to take a role in decision making, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, well, it helps too. Gives your wife a feeling of being a partner with you in the business, which of course she certainly is. And it's always good when people can work together, especially in the horse business, because there's not a lot of free time to spend with your spouse and your kids. You really have to, find that balance.
Exactly. No, you're right. Which, she likes to say it's a lifestyle, and it is that, really, it's 24/7, and it's a labor of love. And for us to be able to work together, not necessarily at the barn. She doesn't come to the barn, but she does plenty of this, like I said, the stuff that I really don't like to do and that she's good at. keeps it running as a business and really frees me up to do what I like to do, which is train horses.
Yeah, yeah, that's super important. Well, you know, as I mentioned in the open, I've known you a long time since you were, you know, a teenager or maybe even younger. And I know, you know, our families have been close over the years. Your parents divorced when you were really young, and at some point your mom did something that changed so many people's lives in a positive way, including my family, certainly your family. She married a man named Gary Hallman. And he told me once that if you took a quick glance at his past performances, she was taking a huge shot. But
No doubt about it. Yeah.
But he turned out to be one of the top five men I've ever known in my life. And boy, did he love your mom, Sue. Talk about Gary and his influence on your life.
Well, you know, it was a tremendous influence on my life. You know, I'd never seen a horse race or, you know, seen a horse up close until I met him. And, you know, they got together. I believe I got married and I was 8 years old, and he loved the races and he took us to the races, and I fell in love instantly. And, you know, I've been hooked ever since, 43 years later.
Yeah. Well, he had to be responsible for your passion in racing, huh?
No, definitely was. He and I shared, that was our big bond, was our love of horse racing. And, you know, he taught me a lot about, you know, how to read a racing form, how to handicap, pedigrees, breeding, gambling, you name it. And, you know, he was a tremendous influence in my life. You know, he, like I talked about, you know, learning lessons about money, and he used to always preach, it's not what you earn, it's what you save. And you got to pay yourself first and things of that nature that, you know, to this day, you know, 40 some years later, still ring true. And, you know, they're valuable lessons. And you know, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for Gary Hallman.
Yeah, I think about him all the time. He oftentimes had little tidbits, you know. He always used to say, you should never let anybody know whether you win or lose. You should be the same no matter what. And I think by and large, he was that way. You never know if he hit a pick six for $150,000 or he lost 10 grand at the track when you'd go over to your house for dinner or we'd go out for dinner. He was the same guy no matter what. He'd you know, be gregarious and tell his stories, and you never knew whether he had a good day or a bad day.
No, you're right about that, and he and I differ in that, and I guess you can tell that we're not blood relatives, because you can tell very easily whether I had a good day or a bad day. And, you know, it's just a personality thing, but he had that right mentality to be a gambler, to be a horse owner, and was very, you know, even-keeled and unemotional. And, you know, he had a lot of good lessons that he told me and you and anyone else that wanted to listen. He used to tell me, he said, on the racetrack, you never have to lie because no one will believe you anyway. He said, always tell the truth because no one will believe you anyway. And he was right. It was a joke, but it was kind of true that, you know, if you just tell the truth, you never have to worry about what you said and remember what you said, and people aren't going to believe you on the racetrack anyhow, so it doesn't matter.
That's right. Well, your mom used to call him the big guy, and that wasn't only on account of his stature, but I think that was a metaphor for his personality, and he was certainly a larger-than-life personality. Everybody on the racetrack knew him, and he was always very approachable, and he helped a lot of people, you know, taught him how to make pick six tickets in a wise way. If you ask him a question who he liked, he never, you know, kept one for himself, so to speak. I mean, he was one of those guys that was just always honest and just a really good guy. And I'm thankful that I got to be part of his life for a while.
Me too. No, he was a straight and narrow, straightest shooter as you'd want to know. And the sharpest gambler probably any of us will ever know. I mean, he was as sharp as they come with numbers. he just had one of those mathematical minds that he could figure out, you know, what the place and show price was going to be before the totalizator board put it up. And, you know, he just had just a super sharp mind for numbers and very analytical and great, you know, numbers guy. And again, that even-keeled personality really serves you well when you when you're a professional gambler, as he was.
Yeah, it's great. I see you use his silks sometimes still, and I always love seeing him. I enjoyed training for him. I didn't train a lot of horses for him, but we had a few over the years, and it was always a lot of fun to have one for Gary. I think he was a very good owner as well.
Yeah. No, he's a good owner. You know, those silks that you see are his silks, and I use them on horses that I own. So they've remained in the family, and he was a good owner. He, you know, just like most other owners, just wanted to win. Used to, you know, in the words of Al Davis, just win, baby.
Yeah, I think he quoted him a few times.
Yeah.
Well, you had kind of an interesting upbringing to getting to the racetrack as far as that was concerned. You knew a lot about racing when you started working on the backside, and you worked for a fantastic litany of trainers, Hal King, Joe Manzi, Mike Mitchell. Talk about that a little bit and your experiences as you learned your craft.
Don't forget, I worked for Jude Feld and Charlie Whittingham.
Well, there's two names never been in the same sentence before.
Well, you just heard them together. I was very fortunate. My dad, our first trainer was Joe Manzi. And Joe was a great trainer, and he had worked under Charlie, and so I got to work for Joe and Hal King, both long deceased. Then we moved over to Mike Mitchell, who was just, you know, a phenomenal horseman and just a great, great horseman and a great claiming trainer. And then when I graduated high school, I went to work for Charlie Whittingham for 3 years, and then I joined your barn. And I learned a lot working for you. You were really good. You delegated and you gave a lot of responsibility to me. And I think, it really helped me grow as a person and a trainer.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. We used to have a lot of fun together. And I always think about the time we took El Presidente Uno to the Illinois Derby.
That was
a lot of fun. That was your first assistant type job, and first time I'd raced a horse that far out of California. So it was a good experience for both of us.
That was a ball.
Yeah,
that was a lot of fun. We went to a long defunct Sportsman's Park, which was a bull ring, and the horse didn't win the race, but I thought he ran pretty well, and it was a great experience, my first time traveling with a horse. And I really appreciate all you did for me.
Well, you were always so conscientious, and I think that was one thing that I loved having you on staff, was I knew there wasn't going to be anything that wasn't looked at. You made sure the horse's temperature was good, how he was eating, you know, how he galloped. You called me every morning till I got there and let me know what was going on. And you know, that's something that's irreplaceable. It's hard to find people like you that treat the horses like they belong to them. And I think that's vitally important if you're going to have a top assistant.
Well, thank you. No, I appreciate that. This business, as you know, it's more than just a job, and it's more than just a business. It's a labor of love, and it is a lifestyle. I'm just fortunate, as you are, that we found this game.
You used to gallop horses, of course, for Charlie, and that had to be a great experience getting on some of those fantastic horses. Do you still get on some of your horses now when you're training in the morning?
You know, I haven't in the past. I think it's probably been about 5 years since I've gotten on any race horses.
you know, put on a few pounds and also, you know, with the responsibility of training a large stable and, you know, having kids, I really can't afford to get hurt. But I did enjoy galloping horses, and I galloped horses for, 20, 30 years, and it was valuable experience. And I think, you know, a lot of times it gives me a little insight, you know, when I see something and I can, you know, tell an exercise boy, you know, try this or try that. And it's been a helpful part of my, rounding out as a trainer.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. That's vitally important, you know. There was nobody ever looked at me and thought I ever got on a horse. only in Jamaica. But I like two horses too much to get on. But yeah, I think that insight that you have as a exercise rider and somebody that's worked horses, you can actually explain better what you want to an exercise rider or even a jockey, and you know the intricacies of working a horse. Like, a lot of people don't understand that if you want the horse to work good, they've got to go the first eighth pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand that. So to me, when I hear a trainer say, oh, you know, I wanted a good work in this horse, and the exercise rider let him go too slow, I mean, you got to tell them ahead of time. You know, get this horse going if you want a good work. And if you want one that's slow, tell them, you know, go easy the first part, because horses can only do what they can do. So it's a matter of communication. And I think when you have that, background and technique, that it's easier for you to explain to somebody what it is you want them to do.
No doubt about it. I've gone to headphones the past 5 years, and they've been really invaluable in, you know, just kind of giving the riders the splits. And just today I had a horse and the rider went off in 14-1. And so, you know, instead of, you know, panicking and freaking out, I just said, hey, just pick it up a little bit and keep going to the 7/8 pole, you know. So instead of working to the wire, work them out an extra eighth of a mile and let them gallop out to the 3/4 pole. And so we didn't have a blown work, where in the old days, you know, if I didn't have the headphones on him, he might have gone, you know, 52 for the half.
Right. And then you got to decide, do I want to work him again in a couple days? Did he get enough out of it? What are we going to do? You know, I used to tell people when they first started using the walkie-talkies and stuff, they say, how come you don't use a walkie-talkie? I go, because I can't yell at the exercise rider if they screw up.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I have nobody to blame but myself.
Yeah, no, this is true. And then now when they screw up with the walkie-talkies, they just say, I couldn't hear you.
That's right. Like the quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, I couldn't hear you. Yeah, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But you know, I'm fortunate. I've got some really good work riders that work for me, and that is really key to being successful is having good guys work your horses.
Yeah, absolutely, invaluable. What about San Luis Rey Downs? You train a lot of horses out of there, and you seem to have tremendous success. Is that because you want to have them all together, or is it just a great place to train horses?
It's a combination. Yeah, I'm actually here right now, and it's a very quiet, tranquil facility, and it limits the horses. I think we have a max at 500, and so, you know, the weather's fantastic, the air's clean. You don't have the constant loudspeaker of like you do at Santa Anita or Del Mar, and the races being called and run, and the tractors and the water trucks and all that stuff. So, you know, I think I'm a big believer in keeping horses relaxed, and so I think it just makes it that much easier for me to keep horses relaxed. And if they're relaxed, they eat better, they don't get the ulcers, they train better, they rest better. So just it's same as a human being. You know, if we're getting proper nutrition, proper exercise, and proper rest, we're going to be at our best. And, you know, if you're living in the middle of New York City and you got, you know, horns honking and trucks going by all the time, it's not so easy.
Yeah, you never get any rest. Well, you mentioned when you were on the show the last time that you were a barn rat, so I'm not surprised that you're at the barn at San Luis right now. You always have been a person that liked hanging around the barn. When you were working for me, you were living in Beverly Hills with your parents. You would make that commute to Santa Anita every day, which is a long drive. I mean, an hour, hour and 15 minutes. Of course, at the hour you were getting up, it was a little easier traveling. But, that's really dedication. And I believe you used to live in, like, Solana Beach or that area. Do you still live in that area and then drive to San Luis Rey?
My wife and I, we live in Encinitas, so I'm about 10 minutes north of Del Mar and about 30 minutes from San Luis Rey. And, you know, we love living down here. It's a great place to live, and it's a great place to raise kids. So, you know, I do have to drive to L.A. a lot during Santa Anita. So that, you know, I'll make that drive, you know, a couple times a week. But now with the schedule in California, with Del Mar having two meets and Los Al having meets and running 4 days a week, it's not nearly as bad as it was, say, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Do you keep like an apartment or something up by Santa Anita, or you just make the drive?
I'll stay in a hotel once or twice a month if I got, you know, because I keep my second string up at Santa Anita. So if I'm up there, say I got horses in Saturday, Sunday, I'll maybe stay in Pasadena on a Saturday night and go train at Santa Anita on a Sunday. Usually I'm driving back and forth, but I try to limit my trips to twice a week.
Yeah, the game's changed quite a bit with the scheduling in California, the absence of Hollywood Park. What are the challenges now that trainers face?
Well, you know, I mean, we're running 4 days a week, so you're 20% less opportunities as to, you know, we used to be 5 days a week. So you definitely have less opportunity, but at the same time, you have more time to have a little bit of a semblance of a regular life. And so, you know, I don't know how the guys on the East Coast do it with all the traveling between Florida and Kentucky and Saratoga, and I couldn't do that. You know, I like California for that you can have a pretty much stable family life. Perhaps not making as much money as you could make on the East Coast, but, you know, life's a trade-off.
Yeah, well, that's true, and I agree with you. I mean, I think in a way we were always spoiled in California because it's an island, and like the biggest move we ever had to make was to Del Mar. Then that's, you know, that's a real crown of thorns, as I like to say, happened to go to Del Mar. And
right.
It's amazing that these trainers on the East Coast, they most of them have to have at least two homes. They need to have two or three or four cars. I mean, it's insane. And then all the equipment, and then your horses are always someplace where you're not. It's really difficult to negotiate all of those things where, you know, in California, we were able to at least keep horses close to us, like within an hour or so of wherever we were stabled, so that we could go see them on a regular basis and, you know, participate in their training. Otherwise, it's always in the hands of assistants.
I agree. And we got spoiled, and a lot of guys are really spoiled. They don't want to make the drive ever. They don't want to drive from Santa Anita to Hollywood Park, you know? So, you know, it works for and against you, but, you know, I like the current calendar, and I like the current format that we have going in California. You know, we do have issues, lack of horses, lack of options. You know, we are on an island, but, you know, we're running without any casino money, and we handle the most money of anywhere in the country. So I think California does have some things to really be proud of.
Yeah, and it's certainly not easy to win a race there.
No, it's as tough a place as you'll find in the world. I can't tell you how many trainers have come from the East Coast to Santa Anita and thought they were going to, you know, set the world on fire, and they went back with their tails between their legs. So it's it's pretty rough out here. You know, guys, they're good trainers, and they run aggressively. And if you're afraid to lose a horse, you're in the wrong neck of the woods.
How many training titles do you have in California now?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere 7 or 8, something like that.
Well, that's good. I'm sorry to say I didn't look that up.
I don't know. You know, I think it's in that, you know, in that ballpark, and those are, you know, like I said, they're fun if you can win them, and again, they're hard to win. You know, you got guys out here with big barns, you know, 150, 200 horses, Jerry Hollendorfer and Bob Baffert and Doug O'Neill and others that they make me get up every day early and work hard, you know. So it's tough out here, but again, if you work hard and you get lucky and you have those, you know, it's all about the clientele and the horses. You know, if you've got the clientele and the horses and they allow you to do what needs to be done and run the horses where they belong, you can be successful.
Yeah, picking spots is always very important, and you do such a fine job of it. And I think it's a tribute to you that you don't know how many leading trainer titles you actually have. It shows you're not driven to win those titles like some guys are. We have a couple guys here on the West Coast that's really about all they think about. But I know you're from a family and a culture of winning, so winning is important to you. But
absolutely. Winning, right. Winning, what is it? Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing.
Yeah.
But the titles, you know, you can only do so much. And, you know, a lot of it does come down to good luck and good fortune and things of that nature. But, you know, they certainly are fun to win. And I do like winning them when I have the opportunity.
You and Doug dead heated for a title. Was it at Del Mar or was it at Santa Anita? I can't remember which one.
We dead heated at Santa Anita. At Santa Anita last year. And, you know, I've dead heated a couple of times for the title and then won a few on my own. And we got a shot to win this one here at the Bing Crosby meet. I think we're leading right now. And, you know, hopefully we can hang on.
Yeah, well, you're having a good streak. This is Jude Feld, and you're listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. And we're going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and we'll be back with Pete Miller after these words.
Make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic December Mix Sale, Tuesday, December 5th in Timonium, Maryland. The sale will be followed by a special Horses of Racing Age supplement. Entries for this supplement will be taken until November 21st, and nominations are now being accepted for the 2018 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, being held at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida on March 28th. You can nominate to this premier two-year-old in training sale by visiting FasigTipton.com. That's FasigTipton.com. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Attention horsemen, the 2017 Iowa Stallion Auction takes place December 2nd through the 9th, with all monies raised used to fund 3 stakes races, which had total purses of nearly $219,000 this year. The auction is the only stallion auction where the donator of the stallion season is eligible to receive a $5,000 per race bonus. All foals born in 2019, regardless of what state they're foaled in, are eligible to nominate. Make your stallion donation now at iowathoroughbred.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Maya, one of the names in the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Earn 25% more for every win when you send your horse to Virginia by taking advantage of the new Virginia Certified Program. Simply send your horse to reside in Virginia for 6 months prior to December 31st of their two-year-old year and be eligible for a 25% owner's bonus for wins in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, and West Virginia, regardless of state-bred status. There's value in Virginia with the new Virginia Certified Program. Visit VABred.org for details.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As they come toward the top of the stretch, and they have to come and get Imperial Hint, who's taken over from Takapo. Imperial Hint off the turn in front. Roy H on the outside on the attack. The two of them arrive at the final 16th together. Imperial Hint digs in. Roy H runs at him. Roy H to the front from Imperial Hint. Mind Your Biscuits third. Roy H and Kent DeSormo do it in the Breeders' Cup Sprint over Imperial Hint. Then Mind Your Biscuits in American Pastime. The final time, 108.61. Peter Miller did it again.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That was Roy H. exerting his superiority in this year's Breeders' Cup Sprint. Peter Miller did it again, Larry Colmas said. Wow, that was pretty cool. This is Jude Feld, and I'm visiting with Pete right now. We want to remind you, if you're just tuning in or you missed any portion of this show, you can go to horseracingradio.net to hear what you missed on the archive, and it's also available at Horse Racing Radio on iTunes. And Pete, wow, that got to give you goosebumps, huh?
It really does. It really does. That was just, a day to remember and, a once-in-a-lifetime experience to have a day like that. It just, it makes all the blood, sweat, and tears worthwhile.
Yeah, no kidding. And that wasn't your first, big win. You won, of course, you won the fifth race before that too. We'll get to that in a minute, but you've had some really nice horses over the years. By my calculations, it's 6 grade one winners now, is that right?
I believe so. So we've been fortunate to have some nice horses and win some of the highest level races, and it's really exciting when you can do that.
Yeah, you won the Cash Call Futurity with Comet to the Top. That's a grade one. You won the Woodford Reserve with Finnegan's Wake. That's a grade one. You won the La Brea with Air Kitty. That's a grade one. You won the Del Mar Debutante with Set Play. That's a grade one. So you had 4 grade one wins going into this year's Breeders' Cup, and that's a fabulous feat for any trainer.
Yeah, no, it's great, and so, like I said, it takes clients, and I'm just lucky to have, some really good clients like Gary Hartunian and Gary Barber and that give me the opportunity to, train good horses. And really, that's what it's all about.
Who's been your favorite horse to train? Do you have one?
Yeah, I've got some favorites for sure. Comet of the Top was one of my favorites. And we retired him to the old friends in Kentucky. Fast Parade was one of my favorites. Still holds a track record at Del Mar, 5/8 on the grass. And that was the first horse I trained for Gary Barber. So that was 10 years ago. And, and then there were some cheaper horses like Next Door Neighbor, who's one of my all-time favorites. But he was running for $8,000 and $10,000. But just a uber hard knocker, and we won probably 8 races with him, and they all have a special place in my heart, but certainly Stormy Liberal and Roy H is my first 2 Breeders' Cup horses are right up there as well.
Yeah, they gotta make the mantle, huh?
no doubt about it.
How about a horse that maybe wasn't all that famous, but you consider — this is a question I like to ask because it's a trainer's kind of question — but, did you ever have a horse that nobody really knew what a great job you did training it, but you knew what a great job you did?
Yeah, certainly. I think Next Door Neighbor is one of those horses. And God Even, just hard-knocking, solid kind of horses that you know, got even. I bought him as a yearling for $14,000. And he just won last week at 8 years old, and he won an optional 40, and he's cowbred, so it was a big purse and a big bonus. And, you know, it just, you know, tickles me to have a horse that I've had for, you know, 7 years and have him still running well and still be sound. And, you know, I just love those kind of horses.
Yeah, those old guys, they're hard to beat. They just keep running along, and they love their jobs. It's always great to see. Well, before we run out of time, which I know we have almost a half hour left, but we got to talk some Breeders' Cup here, because I mean we could probably do 2 hours together, maybe three, who knows, but
for sure, I mean
that was an unbelievable day for you. Yeah, two entrants in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. It was 5/8 this year, Stormy Liberal and Richard's Boy, and you had Roy H. in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. And let's say it's Wednesday before the race, the PPs are out. What are you thinking at that point?
Well, I really thought I was live. I thought all four horses were doing really well. I love the draws. I went to the draw, I think it was Monday night or Tuesday night in Del Mar, and I really loved Roy H. drawn towards the outside, and I liked, you know, Richard's Boy and Stormy Liberal being on the inner half going 5/8. So the only bad draw was Calculator drawing the rail. But anyone that asked me, you know, I said, look, they're all live. Roy H. is my best chance, but don't be surprised if Richard's Boy or Stormy Liberal wins.
Well, you got a little lucky, because I bet a few bucks on Calculator. I just loved his breeze.
Yeah, no, he breezed well. And I, you know, he was just a little bit short. You know, I'd missed him training with a sore foot. And, you know, he was one or two works away from hitting the board in there. But just wasn't quite meant to be for him.
Yeah,
came out of the race well. All of them came out of the race as well, and you know, looking forward.
So in the turf sprint, you had a speed horse and a closer. That's like every trainer's dream entry, because he knows he's going to be in it at some point. Did the race kind of run to your handicapping?
Pretty much. You know, I told Flavian Pratt. He knew the horse, and I said, look, you know, he's got speed, but he doesn't need the lead. You got a nice draw in the seven hole, you know, get a position, which he did. He gave the horse a super ride, and, you know, I feel for the horse. He ran his eyeballs out and was really unlucky not to win the race. And then I told Joel, you know, looks like plenty of speed. He drew the four hole, just settle, you know, in the second tier, try and save some ground, and he'll come running. And, you know, it's rare that a plan actually works out.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then in the other race, Roy H., you open the PPs and you see he's got to run against Dre Fong and some other just really tough sprinters. Was that intimidating, or did you think, yeah, they got to beat me?
I really felt confident. You know, I felt like we should have been 6 for 6 going into the race. We were very unlucky in the Bing Crosby when Dre Fong got loose and carried us very wide into the stretch. And so, no, the horse had done nothing wrong all year. I felt like he should have been undefeated, and I felt a little bit like, you know, we were being overlooked as the third choice in the race.
So now it's Saturday. What was that like? To start when you got out of bed in the morning. What was Saturday morning like?
Well, you know, it really started Friday night when – you know, the first few horses that I ran Friday didn't run so well, and they were kind of long shots, so I guess it was to be expected. But you kind of like to get momentum into these days. And Friday night, we won the last race with Belvoir Bay for Gary Barber and Team Valor. Won the Ken Matty 5/8 Filly and Mare Sprint. And that, when I won that race, that kind of really kind of lifted my spirits, like, I think we're going to win one tomorrow. And then so when Saturday came about, I was really in a good frame of mind, felt positive, felt like we were going to win a race. And so, you know, to win two was just a dream come true, and to run 1-2 is just beyond a dream come true.
Yeah, it's always good to have that confidence. It was a nice win for me too, Belvoir Bay, because I had a good exact in there, and it kind of set the tone for Saturday's racing. Another good gambling day, and it was really cool that you won the race, and it does it, that confidence. I think the horses can feel it too. Your barn gets up, and there's just like a positive vibe going around the barn, and I think it makes a big difference.
No doubt about it. I agree with you. I really believe in that when things are good around the barn and there's positive energy and mojo, the horses sense it, they feel it, they feed off it, and vice versa. When, the boss is in a bad mood and the couple guys didn't show up and we're scrambling and, I'm yelling and it carries. So, it really is important, and I think Belvoir Bay winning Friday night, the nightcap, really set us up for a big day Saturday.
Yeah. The Rockingham Silks, they're a very distinctive blue color. Nobody else has that color to my knowledge. And there was a point in the stretch that I thought to myself, Pete can't lose. Did you allow yourself to think that?
No. No, absolutely not.
I know you too well.
I've lost too many grade ones by a nose and a head. And no, at no point did I think I can't lose. I just said, please, where's the wire? Where's the wire?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because I'm just sitting there, I'm going, oh my God, Pete can't lose this race. And I was kind of laughing because I'm going, he's probably sweating it out.
No doubt. I sweat it out. And, too many races I've lost, big races in the shadow of the line that, I don't get excited until the official sign goes up.
Yeah, that's for sure. I hate when somebody says to you at the eighth pole, oh, you got this one. Oh, that's the that horse will stop faster than he was shot.
That's the kiss of death. The kiss of death, and I hate that. And I did that to a friend of mine the other day, and I had to apologize profusely because the horse got beat. And I said, that was just an amateur move that I hate when people do it to me, and I just did it to you, and I'm sorry. Can I buy you a beer?
Well, that was very thoughtful of you. So yeah. when they hit the wire, I immediately thought of Gary and how he'd probably be standing in the winner's circle with two fists in the air. So
no doubt about it. That was his trademark, the right hand in the air with fist pumped, and it definitely would have been a dream to have him there in the winner's circle.
A lot of things came flooding back to me at that point, like all the summer things that we did when you were younger and hanging out at your parents' house and all of that. It really was an emotional win for me.
Well, you're not alone. I shed a tear or two, and it's amazing how your kind of your whole life and your certainly your professional life flashes back, and all the hard times when you couldn't make payroll or you couldn't pay the feed man, and getting fired, which we all have been. And it really for an emotional experience for me.
Yeah, well, the late Eddie Gregson said there's only two kinds of trainers: those that have been fired and those that are going to get fired.
No doubt about it.
That's
for sure.
That's a true story right there. But I don't know. We had Ralph Nix on after he won the Juvenile Fillies, and he was doing an interview, and the tears were rolling down his face, and Joe Clancy talked about that, and for him it was really emotional too, because him and Mike Smith had been riders together, and Mike Smith had once like closed him up into a couch because he didn't get out of bed in the morning. So
yeah.
that took him back to those days.
The ties the six separations of horse racing, we're all kind of intertwined and all know each other. And I was really happy for Ralph Nix and really happy for John Kimmel. And, you know, a lot of guys, you saw a lot of names that had never, you know, won a Breeders' Cup before win them this year. And it's really good for them and good for the industry.
Yeah, Mr. Broman, too. I mean, he'd spent a lot of money in this game, and he finally got one of those Ecorche statues, and I was happy for him as well. So now we're coming up to Roy H's race. Are you still euphoric when you go to the paddock to saddle him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The couple of glasses of champagne have gone straight to the head. And, yeah, I'm in a bit of a never-never land, really. Just euphoria, just kind of floating. And, you know, I think the horse must have sensed the kind of the relief and the, you know, the euphoria, because he didn't turn a hair, which he rarely does anyway, and he just went about his business. And, you know, Kent DeSormo, there aren't any cooler customers than Kent DeSormo and Roy H.
Yeah, well, Kent's a good winner, too. Nobody wins a race like Kent.
yeah. Now, Kent's the best, and to win a race, you know, like that with Kent DeSormo really meant a lot.
Two Breeders' Cup wins in a day, that's got to be a pretty exclusive club. Another thing I didn't research, but I'm sure the stats are out there. There can't be many trainers that can say that, and that's something that they, you know, will never take away from you.
Yeah, no, it was, like I said, it was a dream come true, and my home track, Del Mar, and to run 1-2 and win two, and with a horse I claimed, no less, Stormy Liberal. Fairy tale stuff.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Yeah, I trained a horse for Gary soon after I had won my first 100 grander in my first graded race with a horse that I had claimed for $20,000. And Gary was so enamored with that that he gave me a horse to train, and I was so flattered. But
yeah,
he said, "Wow,
that's
really good."
I remember.
You remember that?
Yeah.
He goes,
"I do remember that. That's why he hired you. He said, this guy can claim a horse and win 100 grand, or I want him training my horse."
Yeah, that was a classic, and that was another thing that went through my head at the time, and it was just really, really cool. Now, you've talked about these horses' future plans. Am I understanding correctly that Roy H. is going to have a little time off now and look towards next year, and that the other horses may be going to foreign lands?
Yes, that's the current plan. Roy H. is going to get a well-deserved break. You know, we're not going to turn him out, but we've just been walking him by hand at Del Mar. And, you know, he won't go back to the track until we get back up to Santa Anita. And, you know, he won't run until the new year. And then Stormy Liberal, he hadn't run for 5 months. And so he's still a fresh horse. And we're thinking about taking him over to Hong Kong for their big turf sprint.
Well, that'll be a lot of fun. Everybody that goes to Hong Kong says how great it is. I haven't been there yet, but everybody just loves how they get treated. They love the racing there. They love the experience, and that would be really cool if you could pull that one off.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I know it's tough. You know, they like everywhere else in the world, they want you to come, but they don't want you to win. So, it's tough. It's a tough ship, but we're gonna give it our best.
That's cool. Well, we need to get you to get one for the Sandy Lane Barbados Gold Cup and take one down there for that. You got to find a mile and an eighth on the turf horse that can handle the sharp turns.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard nothing but good things about that trip, and love to run in that race someday.
What about the sales? Let's talk about that for a minute. I know you're a big proponent of buying two-year-olds in training. Talk about your philosophy there in case anybody's listening and wants to get into business with Pete Miller.
You know, I really like the two-year-old sales compared to the yearling sales. I just think you're close to a race. So someone that bought the yearling in September has had to risk, you know, colic, sickness, chipping an ankle, chipping a knee, not being able to run, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd rather they take that risk, and I'll pay a premium at the two-year-old sale, be able to watch them travel, watch them move, vet them out after they've been going for, you know, 6 months. And you know, to me, it's well worth the premium that you pay.
Do you have kind of a set system that you use when you go to the sales? Do you look at the horses first? Do you look at the catalog? Do you watch the works? I mean, I know you have to do it all, but what's your method?
I do. I've got about a 6-8 point system of kind of filters, and you know, it starts with the videos. You know, I grade the videos a minimum of 2 times each. Kind of a blind. I do it on 2 different sets of papers, so I can't, you know, be influenced by my first grade on a horse. So I'll grade them twice. I'll compare my notes on the grades. Then I'll go through the pedigrees and see which ones, you know, that I like. Then I'll go price point. You know, if someone paid $250,000 or $300,000 for a yearling, I probably can't afford them as a 2-year-old. So we'll do that. Then I'll go to the barn, have to like them physically and on the shank, and then they're going to have to pass a vet inspection, and then they're going to have to fall into the price that I think is what their, you know, fair market value. So there's a lot of hoops they have to jump through in order for me to end up buying the horse.
Well, that's a very comprehensive system, and people think it's easy. Like, you just go look at them and say, oh, I like that one, and raise your hand. But there's a lot of homework that goes into being successful at the sales, and you certainly have done that.
Well, thank you. No, I enjoy it, but it is a lot of work. It's a lot of video watching and a lot of time back at the barns. You know, it's a lot of fun too. So we've had some luck at the 2-year-old sales, and for me, I just think it's advantageous over buying yearlings.
Do you have any particular sales that you like to point for? Do you have any lucky sales?
I do. I love OBS. I'm a huge proponent of the OBS sales. So I go to OBS March and OBS April. And, you know, if I still have any money left, I might go to OBS June.
There you go. That's good. Just keep that dough in Florida until you run out of it, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I think they do a great job. The horses come out of there. They're super horsemen down in the Ocala area, and so I really do focus on the Ocala breeder sales. But you know, we look at certainly the Barrett sales. We bought some nice horses out here at Barrett's. And occasionally we'll go to Maryland or somewhere else.
Yeah, well, good horses can come from anywhere, but I know sometimes you just feel a little bit more confident going into a sale where you've had success and you know the players, the consigners, and that type of thing. That can make a difference as well.
Definitely. I agree with you. The lay of the land, you know the players and the vets and OBS. I have a lot of confidence buying out of OBS.
What about claiming horses when you're looking for them? I know you don't deal as much in claiming horses as you used to, but you still have quite a few.
I enjoy claiming. I think claiming is a lot of fun, and I enjoy the poker match of claiming. And so, you know, I certainly look at possible claims on a daily basis, but I also have owners that pick a lot of their claims. And so Stormy Liberal was picked by Gary Hartunian and Dave Landsman, who's a good friend of Gary Hartunian's. Dave really liked the horse. And so, you know, a lot of times the owners come with horses, and other times I'll come with horses.
Yeah, that's good. Everybody working together to find that right one, and you've certainly found a few that have been more than successful.
Yeah, we got lucky there. You know, the horse won the day we claimed him and ran a big figure, and we just got lucky.
Well, it's not exactly all luck, as we know. You got to have the skills and the team behind you. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show, and we always like to end the show with what we call five fast facts to know about Peter Miller. And that's a kind of a questionnaire that we ask you a few easy questions and you pop off with the answers.
Sure.
So ready to try?
Hope I have them. Yeah, let's go. Let's give it a go.
Okay. What's your favorite fast food?
In-N-Out Burger.
Okay. What about your favorite song?
Oh, that's a toughie. That's a tough one. Too many favorites to name one.
Okay. How about your favorite sports team?
L.A. Lakers.
All right. Good answer. How about your favorite vacation spot?
Cabo San Lucas.
Oh, I like that. And in honor of Bernard Pivot and James Lipton, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome home.
Great answer. Wow, that's cool. So now people know a little bit more about you than just horse racing. Speaking of horse racing, when you aren't at the track, what's your favorite thing to do?
Sleep.
Yeah, I think most trainers would answer that. I always remember Gary getting mad at me if I caught a lot of fish before he had a horse in. Do you remember that?
I like fishing. I do like to fish, and I do like to go to the beach and things of that nature. But when I get a free hour or two, I'm likely to be napping.
Yeah, especially with two little boys. How's that going? How's it being a dad? You like that?
Oh, it's great. I love it. It's the greatest thing ever. And, you know, I've got two great sons and a great wife, and I'm very blessed.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, you had some good role models to look up to when you were younger, and you had such a great family that you come from. And I would expect nothing less. I'm glad that things are working out so good for you. I'm tremendously proud of your accomplishments, and just keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Jude. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate all you did for me back when I was a teenager.
Well, you have a great week. I want you to win the training title at Del Mar now. That's your only task.
Okay. I'm gonna give it my all, and it won't be for lack of trying.
I know that. Well, that's Pete Miller, everybody, and great conversation with Pete this afternoon. He's a one-of-a-kind guy, and if you ever get a chance to meet him, go say hello. So, another fantastic show in the books. I love it when it all comes together, and it certainly did this evening. For Jude Feld and our producer, Lee Della Pina, thank you for listening to Trainer Talk, sponsored by Phasic Tipton. We will be back next week with another fantastic show, and I hope the next ticket you buy is a winning one.